I am Planta on the line. This is the commentary.ca. The author and environmentalist, former cabinet minister and broadcaster Rafe Mayer joins me again. He's always a welcome guest on this program, as I've long been a fan of his broadcasting and writing. What with the year's end so close, it'll be good to check in with him as to what's going on and what we ought to know about. He is a regular columnist at thetie.ca and can be heard regularly on the political panel Monday mornings on CBC Radio. His website is rafeonline.com. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program, Rafe Mayer. Good morning, Mr. Mayer.
Hi, Joe. May I just add one thing?
Sure.
I've now started to write for, matter of fact, for quite a while now, a Russian newspaper which is translated into six languages, and I can just tell people that it's at Strategic Culture Foundation. Strategic Culture Foundation. They may be interested. My mandate is to give a Canadian's view of foreign affairs and so on. Just thought I'd slip that plug.
Yeah. And do you enjoy writing for a different audience now, I guess?
Oh, very much. This is really interesting because it can't just sort of be your opinion based on the pity or tummy and what you read in the newspaper. These things have got to be researched, and I'm having the time of my life doing it. The pay is lousy, but the work's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And do you get feedback from the readers over there?
Yes, indeed, I do. I get it actually filtered through the editorial board, so I never can be sure what they're saying, but they seem to be very pleased and asking me for more columns. So I do two a month, and it seems to be well-received.
What do you make of this Tiger Woods situation?
I'm just thinking of writing an article about that, Joe. I don't know what to think about it except this. You know, the man didn't molest little boys. He didn't run off with somebody's bank account. He didn't give national secrets away to the enemy or any of that sort of thing. He committed probably the oldest sin in history, and that's adultery. He was a damn fool because he has to know in the position that he's in that if he's ever caught at something like that, it's just it's a terrible, terrible story. First of all, I guess because I'm such a huge fan of his, I'm disappointed, very disappointed. Secondly, I think I'm angry that he would subject himself to that. But thirdly, I look at him as a human being, and I think of myself, and I say, oh, Rafe, you're 33 years of age once. What were you doing in those years? I don't want to talk about that, really. And you've been divorced twice. So who are you to talk about the morality of it? But I'm very, very saddened because he's such a great golfer. I hate to see him have these kind of feet of clay.
What does this do to his career? Does it anything?
Well, it's interesting that you should ask that. I think there are as many answers to that as there are questions asked. I suspect that he's going to go on fine. In terms of playing golf, I think he'll be able to play golf as he always has. He certainly may have problems with some of his sponsors. Sponsors are notoriously fickle when it comes to that sort of thing. And you can understand that they would be because they're putting Tiger Woods' image across as sort of the fine golfer or fine man, fine family man, and so on, and that's partially shattered. So he may lose something there. I mean, he deserves to take a kicking. There's no question about that, Joe. I can't imagine how he could be so stupid.
What does this do to golf, though? I know a lot of people watch golf because of him.
Well, I don't think it'll do much to golf. I think what Tiger's done an extraordinary job over the years that he's been on the PGA. He's changed the whole game. There's no question about that. And he's got other players now sort of beating on his, falling behind that may very well, do some of the things that he did. I think that his impact on golf is there, will never go away. I hope that's true anyway because he's been a marvelous tonic for the game. Imagine they're playing in China now, and all sorts of places you'd never think that they would be playing golf. And he's just done a fantastic job.
I was reading up on you and preparing for this, and I came across this letter from a guy named David Field.
Oh yeah.
And he wrote some paper, I guess, in the summertime. He called you a source of increasing hysteria and misinformation. What's this about, and where's he from?
Well, I'm just trying to think of David Field. I remember that, and I sorry, yes, of course, David Field. He is the guy from the Green Energy Society, whatever they call themselves. And Joe, you can be almost certain that any organization that has green in it is anything but green. But this guy followed me around to a lot of the speeches that I gave, and he simply has a hard time telling the truth about them. He would come to these meetings and he'd trot out some, absolutely obtuse fact from somewhere and demand that I comment upon it and that sort of thing. How many megawatts will such and such a program, a project have, as if I walk around with that in my brain. But he's just a shill for them, and I don't know what more I can say. I have not got my facts wrong at all. As a matter of fact, each day goes by verifies what I've been talking about. And the particular one, if I may just segue very quickly, is the one about the BC Hydro dividend. As you know, Joe, for years, BC Hydro has given very substantial dividends to the province of British Columbia, which go to our schools, our hospitals, and so on. And now with this private power, they simply won't be there. The reason is BC Hydro has to pay about double the amount to independent power corporations for the power, double the amount that they can get on export. It has to export most of it because it's the private power is produced when BC Hydro is doing just fine. It isn't produced in the wintertime when BC Hydro may need some money. So this is the one I think that's caught people's attention. We are, in essence, transferring $300-$500 million each year out of our pockets to the shareholders of the likes of General Electric. And Field tries to say that's not true. I mean, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to figure that out. I mean, that's what's happening.
And do you find that people are getting hip to this, that they're knowing things about this?
I think they are. I rely a lot, of course, on the responses I get on my own email, my own website, and that sort of thing. But I think the light has started to go on now. See, one of the difficulties that I had and others had explaining this to people is that people would say nobody could be that dumb. No government could be that stupid. But unfortunately, that's exactly what they are. And just very quickly to run over for your listeners, BC Hydro can't bring any new power on stream except Site C, and nobody wants that, which means that all power is to be generated by private producers. That power, by and large, can only be produced during the runoff. That makes sense. Their rivers aren't high enough for the rest of the year. During the runoff, BC Hydro doesn't need any power. It's got full reservoirs and lots of power. So, because it's been forced to buy this power from the independent producers, now must sell it on the export market, which they get about 50 cents on the dollar. Now, sooner or later, something has to happen. Either BC Hydro goes broke, or more likely, they get a rate increase so that the people of British Columbia will be paying that amount of money that used to be going to them. I mean, it is really bizarre. It's hard to believe that anybody could be that stupid. But, Joe, I always fall back on Mayer's Axiom 1. You know, you make a serious mistake, assuming people in charge know what the hell they're doing.
And how do we get away from this? I mean, this is obviously the doing of the government, right?
No question about it, and we just have to keep on plugging away. A lot of damage has been done. But what I look at, it's sort of like Sir Harry Lauder used to sing, you know, must keep right on till the end of the road. If at the end of the day I've only saved, in my efforts and other people's, I've only saved one river, it's worth the effort. They're a long way to go, though, and I think that people are now starting to get roused up. They certainly are, and the East Kootenays, West Kootenays, I should say, and I do get the sense that there's going to be pressure brought. Whether we actually get anything done, Joe, I just don't know. I hope so.
Field, in this letter that he wrote, I must have it here somewhere in the file, he says that when you and Carol James went on this plane trip looking for damage to the environment, that you found none.
Well, that's just nonsense. Now, that was probably the worst political exercise that I've ever seen. It was not done by me. Mr. Field seems to think I paid for that flight, and I sure as hell didn't. I was a guest on it. What they did is, instead of getting a helicopter, they got a fixed wing, so you couldn't get really near these projects, and when you did get near them, they were just these little portholes for the press to shoot their film through, and they were thoroughly and absolutely pissed off at the end of it, and it hurt the NDP a great deal. But what Mr. Field says is just simply not true. We did get close enough to the Ashloo to see what it was like, to the amount of the river that it controlled and so on, and we did get up to Harrison to see the roads and transmission lines and so on that are going in there and the scarring that's doing. So I don't know. Mr. Field seems to think that I paid for that trip and somehow I should take the blame for it. As far as I was concerned, it was generally a waste of time, and the NDP paid for it.
Now, as we're talking today, Gordon Campbell is in Copenhagen, hyping up that he's a great environmentalist with his accomplishments over climate change. What do you make of all that?
Well, I talked on CBC about this yesterday, Joe. Can you imagine this man that sacrificed hundreds of thousands of pink salmon smolts to his friends in the fish farm industry? The man that's going around and smashing our rivers left, right, and center in order to get private power to go into corporations south of the line. This is the same man that's going to Copenhagen and saying, look at me, I'm an environmentalist. I mean, I think the Jews have a great word for it. It's chutzpah, and it's chutzpah at its best. I mean, this is just the sheerest of hypocrisy.
Have you been following what's going on in Ottawa over the Michael Ignatieff and his leadership?
Generally speaking, I have. Actually, I've gone through a pretty busy period the last couple of weeks, but yeah, generally speaking, I have. Ignatieff is a catastrophe for the Liberals.
Yeah. What do you think that says about where that party's headed?
Well, you know, I wouldn't have said this, three or four months ago even, I don't suppose, Joe, but it looks to me, and I've written on this, it looks to me as if the NDP has a chance, a faint chance, however, becoming the next opposition party. The Liberals are in such disarray. And I can tell you just one example. I think most people who know me know that I know something about the environmental issues in British Columbia. I offered Mr. Ignatieff, as I've done other leaders, some time and try to explain to him what these fish farm issues are all about and what the private rivers, et cetera, are all about. I don't even get a reply. And if he wants to win 25 seats or so in British Columbia, he better know about those issues because, as we were talking a moment ago, people are more and more and more understanding them. So, you know, if that's the Liberal Party's approach to British Columbia, I can only assume that it's not much better to anywhere else except perhaps Quebec and Ontario.
In your column in the Taille this week, you write about the NDP and their problems and what they need to do. In BC, what does Carol James need to do? Do you think she'll continue as leader?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I initially said I thought just for a couple of years. I think I'd still say that. I don't think that she'll be in the next election, but that's only a tummy feel. I haven't got anything really to go on. But as I say in the column, Joe, the NDP is a very different party from most political parties. All political parties are coalitions of various interests. They all are. It doesn't matter what you go to. There's a left wing and a right wing and a center in all of the parties. The NDP, however, is that plus because its factions all stay separate in the sense that they exist separately and come together at a convention. And I use this example. Jim Sinclair, who is the president of the BC Federation of Labor, gave a speech, and he gave a pretty good slashing to the leader and to the party, etc. And that's what he's supposed to do as the head of the BC Federation of Labor. So that's what Carol James has to put up with. Now, let's take a look at the Liberals. Do you think as the keynote speaker they'd put up Daddy Warbucks, who wants to lower the minimum wage and wants to decertify unions and all those sorts of things? Of course they wouldn't. They don't have to do that, so they put up somebody that puts some, you know, sort of a kind of pap out there, and nicely, nicely, rah, rah, rah. So the NDP and Ms. James have that problem, and they're never going to get around it because that's what the NDP is. That's a long way around saying, I don't think that she's going to be able to keep the big factions, particularly the labor unions, behind her long enough for the next election. And very quickly, might remind people that it was Carol James that took away the special vote considerations for labor. So Jim Sinclair and Labor are not going to be disposed kindly towards her in any event.
Have the Olympics affected you a great deal up there in Lions Bay?
Huh. Well, Wendy and I are about to become refugees from the Olympics. Joe, we're taking off for 37 days when the Olympics are on. So far, no, but I know that the torch is coming through and in early February, I think it is, and I'm sure it'll gear up. The one good thing, and I got to, you know, give credit where credit is due, the Sea to Sky Highway is 1,000% safer than it was. I suppose that's not saying much, but it really and truly is. It's no longer the highway it once was. It's still full of curves, I have to advise my prairie friends. You have to actually turn the wheel once in a while. But it's got, it's got a cement divider down the highway. It's got clear lines. It's got light where you need lights. It's much better.
Where are you guys going for 37 days?
Well, this is we're going on a cruise. We start in New Zealand, and we go to Australia after that, and we go to Perth. And my wife Wendy's got a brother there, so we'll see them. Then we head to Singapore, and then Ho Chi Minh City. And then, unless they're at war with each other, which it looks like they might be, we're going to Cambodia and to Thailand.
I'm going on a bit of a vacation after the holidays, and it involves a really long flight. What do you do on long flights?
How long is your flight?
It's about 16 hours.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not much you can do. What I do on these flights is I get some sleep, and I'm fortunate that if I pop a little pill, I can usually get about 6 hours sleep, and I don't have much problem. But I think the thing that gets you is boredom. You know, it's hard to read and it's hard to listen, et cetera. What I've done, Joe, is I've just said, look, this is a day out of my life. It's a goner, no sense worrying about it. It's lost forever, and there we are.
Do you read much?
Yes, I read a lot. I have a very, very large library, and I read a great deal. Actually, we're lucky in our plane trip because we're going to New Zealand. And New Zealand is only 3 body hours away. It's 21 hours, but it's only 3 hours on your body. So when you get there, you're not bent all out of shape. If you go, for example, to London or any place else, it's about the 8 or 9 hour flight. That's going the wrong way as far as I'm concerned. The only thing that I've been able to do, Joe, and I just drill this into anybody who listens, when I get to wherever it is, I stay up until it's their bedtime. If you go to bed when you get there at 3 in the afternoon, you'll never get yourself back on schedule. So I just tough it through till bedtime.
Yeah. And have you and Wendy have plans for Christmas?
Yes, we have family coming at Christmas time. We're going over to London on the 28th. It's my birthday on the 31st of December. And we've taken to as much as we can celebrating it over there. We just like it so much. We have a special hotel we've been going to for nearly 17 years now, and it's just great, good fun. But your listeners are going to think that I'm rolling in dough, and the answer is not that at all. I've now got to the age where I have to spend some capital to keep it out of the hands of my kids.
Yeah. Well, best of the season to you and Wendy, and happy birthday.
And thank you very much, Joe, and thank you to all your people. I know what a good job you do, and it's always a pleasure talking with you.
You're very good to
and
do
that's
this.
That's going back a long, long way now, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. You're always good to come on, and I hope to talk again in the new year.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much. The website for more is rafeonline.com. Read him on the Taiz website. Rafe Mayer on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Lanta.